Hi everyone, you're listening to the Via Luce podcast, uncensored and completely unedited discussions about life and everything in it. We hope you enjoy the show.
I've got to finish it now. We will get to. Yeah, he was a kid and he actually licked the thing as a joke to see if his tongue would get stuck, and his tongue got stuck. I had to call the ambulance. Couldn't pull it off.
Was it freezing outside?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, think of that when you're a kid. You think, I wonder if that thing's real, where you stick your tongue to something and you can't get it off. Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I grew up in Canada, so trust me, I know what that's like. I did not stick my tongue out on a pole, but I know people who have.
Yeah. Yeah. Stacey Jackson.
Hi.
So you're from Canada, are you?
Born there.
I thought you were born in England.
No. Really?
Yeah, it says that online.
That's Montreal, right?
Yeah, from Montreal. No, where does it say?
Because I triple checked it. Because it said, yeah, you're born in England. I thought, no. I thought,
wrong. Might... Stacey Jackson.
Yeah. It's you. Singer, entrepreneur, really? Mother of four. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just talking about mother of four. So where are your kids from living now?
They're all over the place. I have one who's in Stockholm, one's in New York, one's in Philadelphia, and then I have one that lives with me. They're similar. My two oldest ones are both in like investment, like they do VC, venture capital. Yeah, okay. One's in the sort of tech space. The other one's more in the sports space.
Oh.
And my third is in uni in Philadelphia.
What was the sports one? What sort of?
They do like gaming and, betting and just everything in the sports world.
So none
agents
of them followed you into the business?
No. Although that kid that is in the in the U.S., he plays mean drums. But about it. No, he doesn't. That's
he
it.
Saw
yeah.
Right. So we might as well start at the top. Two words. Snoop Dogg. What's the story? So
that's
book.
Kind of like the middle, not really the top.
Yeah, no.
Your book.
The book. Okay, so that's the end. So right. We can start at the end and work backwards.
Is the book coming out?
The book is coming out.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, the book is coming out. It's a soft launch in time for my birthday, actually. So it's called How a Gangster Rapper Made Me a Better Mom.
And I'm assuming that, unless you hang around with gangster rappers, I'm assuming that's Snoop Dogg?
That is Snoop Dogg. I mean, it's a fictionalized book. Yeah. So, I had sort of the creative license to be able to be, when I'm writing, you could sort of expand on the characters and give them a little bit more humility and more life and more, so it was a lot of fun. And also I'm a creative. So it gave me like the opportunity to like develop the characters. And, it's about a woman who is juggling life. Actually, she's a single mom in the book. So that's why it is fictionalized. And she juggles her kids and her family. But her dream was to become, a musician and like break through the music industry. So she's juggling both. And of course, it's a really tough industry to be in, full stop, whether you're fictionalizing it or it's a real deal. And how she sort of maneuvers, trying to live her own dream while trying to keep her husband's legacy alive and run the family. And it's a
when did you
book.
First think about it?
Oh, years ago, right before COVID, actually.
Oh, it was
No, it was funny because I have friends in the television industry, as you know. And everyone was like, oh, Stacey, you should write a book. You should write a book. I've been approached by every reality show known to man. I mean, Celebrity, Big Brother, Real Housewives, three times. They flew me out to LA, the whole thing, met with Bravo. And my kids and my husband were like, NFW.
Yeah.
Like, there is a hard red line on having cameras around and da da da. But everyone's like, but you've got such a great story. You have to tell your story. So we agreed that, and also someone said to me, okay, tell you what, if you write the book, and this is a guy in a big producer, TV producer said, if you write the book, we'll option it. We'll option the story for it to become a television series.
So when you started at 40.
I started my career. I didn't start writing the book at 40, but I started my career.
Started your career at 40. Yeah. So you had the kids first.
Yeah.
You got married, went to college. So what kind of gave you that inspiration to be like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what I love now at 40. And how did...
such a good question. Because, it wasn't like I just decided, I'm going to learn how to sing. I mean, I was in bands since I was 15. I was writing songs since I was like 12 or 13. So like I always had that dream. And then, life gets in the way. I met the love of my life while I was in college. So I was young. And then, we had a family and I was always in bands. Mm. But... it just wasn't the right time. Excuse me.
Mm. Well, it's sort of like with you at the moment with everything. Like, what made you wait till now to start get everything going with the audio?
In my 30s. Well, I'm early 30s and, you know, I'm still now. I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? You know, I messed around in my 20s. Yeah. Didn't really know bumping into walls. And that's why I'm asking, because it's just such an inspiration for people later on in life.
That it's not over when you have a family. And, you know, it was funny because it was really my husband and I, we made this decision as a family. Like, I was raising kids and he, you know, was building his career and I stayed home with the kids. It, like, that was it. And then I kept having more and more kids. I have four kids. So it was like I needed to be present. And so I put my dreams on hold, you know, deliberately. And it was funny because I never thought that I wasn't going to go back to singing again or working. I always knew that I was going to be doing something after the kids got a little bit more independent and older. But it was funny because, like, recording was really a dream for me. I always performed. Performing and recording are two totally different creative aspects. Like getting up on stage and, like, you know, putting on a show, that's one thing. But the creative sort of path when you're in a studio and putting a song together from nothing, doesn't exist at all. All of a sudden there's a few chords and then there's a top line melody. Then you write lyrics. It's like, you're literally writing a song for me and being in the studio is the most exciting. I mean,
for somebody who knows nothing, we're going to write a song. What's the first thing that happens? Does the song come to you and then you say, I'm going to do a song about that?
Yeah, it could be anything.
Or do you go in and say, let's come in and let's do music?
It could be anything. Like, it could be just a few chords on a piano and, you know, me just coming up with a melody over it. It could be me walking and hearing the click of my heels and suddenly I have a beat and I can just, like, make up a tune. There could be a message somewhere and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write a song about blob. Exactly. Okay. So it's never always, you know, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh my God, I have to write this down. And so it just comes to me and it's...
Have you seen the film Tar? Mm-mm. With, who's in Tar? Kate with a C. Kate Blanchett. Is that her name? Yeah. Where she plays a composer. It's just come out recently.
Oh, no, I haven't
and
seen
she,
it.
And she, yeah. It's, I was just talking to you about the conductor. Mm. I know. Well, I sat down with the conductor and said, right, tell me everything. Mm. You know, how to do... Is it conductor? No, composer.
Composer.
Yeah, that's what he said to me. That's composer. And I said, right, tell me everything. And he hadn't seen the film Tar. And I said, it's about composers with Kate Blanchett. I could even not seen it. Anyway, you're talking about noises. In that, she's very, noises annoy her and people don't understand. And everything about her life is hearing things and whatever. But there's a bit in it. And the person that trained her says, I think it was Chopin. He said he judged somebody on how much little noises annoy him. Like, people that hear everything, you think, oh, they're quite pedantic. You go, no, that's an intelligence. You know, everything's got a meaning.
They're
to
very
it.
Sensitive. Their auditory sensitivity. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's true for me. I think it's more inside. Yeah. I've got, like, stuff that has to come out. Like, I'm like, I just love creating. Yeah, I love it.
It's really creativity. It's like, it's not, stories aren't in you. Creativity is in you, and then it could come out as a book or a song or a letter or an article. You just, it's a thing that's, it's like its own message, but you don't know what the message is till you figure out how it's going to come out.
How do you execute it? So, like, I mean, a while ago, I launched a brand of fitness clothes. I don't know if you saw
about that.
Stay
fit. And, you know, it was a concept.
And
that
it's
I
not
actually
STAY.
Had to, it's STAYE. For me. So it was just a concept. And how do I make this? I don't know how to make it. I'm not in the apparel business. I had no idea. I had to go to, like, Germany and go to fabric fairs in China and go to I needed to learn about, like, what would do what I had in my head that it needed to do. Like, I knew exactly what the problem was. I knew exactly how to solve the problem, but I didn't know how to build it. So I had to learn. And I was, like, you know, in my 40s and I sold it on the Ideal Shopping Channel and, you know, I could have really built it, but my passion was the music and I was just a sort of like, let's see if this can go anywhere, you know, and it got a lot of love, but I mean, right now that side of me is kind of on the back burner because I don't know if it's my ADHD, but I'm always doing something. Now I have to focus on the book. So I have to go and write the book. So there's only one of me and I can only create one thing at a time.
Well, how did you? Did you have a process for the book? Did you say, right, every morning, 1 hour, every this, that?
Yeah.
How did you?
So The book, like, I actually...
Were you given a deadline?
Yes and no. So I had a literary agent, yeah. And then it was right before, it was right during COVID when when the book went out to the publishers. And I got a lot of feedback coming back saying, you know, people are reading differently now. Like, let's give her a little bit more challenges. Okay. So before COVID, I mean, she had challenges, but now after COVID, we killed off the husband in the book. And we decided, okay, let's make her a single.
She married him.
You know, oh, that's not how it happened. Absolutely. But I mean, this is with the love of her life, right? Yeah. So she's gone through a major tragedy right from the first page. And then she, so we really spent the time to develop the characters even more. And it was such a process for me to learn because I never wrote a book before in my life. So getting this feedback from my literary agent saying, okay, this is what needs to change. So I spent a lot of time trying to develop the character, and it was both fun, but also like it was hard. I never wrote a book. So my girlfriend who, she used to be at the Times and now, and then at the Daily Mail. So she's a journalist. Mm-hmm. She's been following my career since the day I turned 40. And I was like, I had my first hit record.
Wow.
And so she like followed this crazy journey. We became really, really good friends. I mean, you know, I adore her. She's subsequently moved out of London. But so she was co-writing the book with me. And so it was so nice to have her as part of this journey because I don't know anything about
also,
writing.
Like being ADHD as well, like you need someone that's accountable. You need someone for accountability.
Totally.
Because otherwise you're up at like 3 o'clock in the morning going, I'm going to write 5 chapters right now.
She would wake up. That's exactly what would happen. She'd be getting WhatsApp messages at like 6 a.m. going, why is she up now asking me about like silly things in the book? I'm like, we don't have continuity between chapter 3 and chapter 8. What happened with this scene? Why did we not pick that up? You know, like
you need someone to like make it make sense.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I've got the same brain where I'm all over the place, right. And I've got like a creative thing here. Sometimes you just need someone to go, okay, right, give me all your creative stuff. Let's make it make sense.
Yeah. Somebody said to me once, just one sentence, and it was only just a brief conversation. He said, you need some scaffolding. He said, you're like an engine. And if without scaffolding, he said, you're going to shake yourself to pieces trying to do too many. In fact, what did your husband do?
He's an investor.
It's the opposite. Right.
No, he's an investor. He like invests in companies.
I knew it.
He's very focused.
We just had this conversation the other day. I said, when you're too creative, you have to have somebody that's the absolute opposite for you. God. So you can have somebody that pays the bills.
My partner, I always joke that he's a robot, that he literally just plugs in, does his job, plugs out. You know, he loves the simple life. He's very much, he would happily just sit and watch something with me and our cat.
And you never find a real creative that's with another creative because it would be paying the bills.
Pandemonium. I can imagine.
It would be a mess because he keeps me like, I'm like, I got this. And he's like, shh, calm down.
My husband's been amazing because in the last year or so, well, since COVID, he started on this like self journey. And like, what's really nice is since I have ADHD, he's actually learning about how to deal with me too.
Mm-hmm.
So like, because I am all over the place. Story is like, if I'm telling him a story, like, you know, I went to the shop to buy tea. I wouldn't just tell him I went to the shop to buy tea. Actually, I never buy tea. I don't drink tea. But like, I went to the shop to buy whatever. It's never that one sentence. It's, so I went to the shop and I guess who I ran into and you know what she was wearing? And so I got distracted, you know, and you're like,
all tangents.
25 different, all, and he's like, why didn't you just tell me that you just went to the shop?
Yeah.
That's all I needed to know.
There was a comedian, and I don't know if this is sexist, I don't think it is, but it was years ago, and he was saying about, he realised that, said, like, when his wife would come home, and it's half genius, he said, she would say, like, oh, there's a problem, whatever the problem was. And he said, why don't you do this, that, and the other? And blah. And she said, but it'd be, then we'd have an argument. And he said, he realised that women, if you can say that, like women, he said, I realised I want to fix things. She just wanted me to listen to the problem. Whereas the man will be, well, why don't you do this? Well, just tell her that and then move on. Well, just tell her to shut up.
Right.
No, I did. So then he realised, oh no, just listen
Let
to
me
her.
Just rant.
And just
Let
go,
me just tell
yeah.
you that I hate her right
And
now.
It was genius. He said, because men want to fix things and move on. Whether it's, no, I just want to communicate the problem. Don't tell me to do that and fix that. And I thought, genius, absolutely genius. You're looking quite trendy there.
Oh, yeah.
And an easy trendy, not like a... in fact, I should thank you for climbing those stairs in your shoes.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Do you remember the...
Oh, God.
This is funny. I meant to look this up a while ago. I've just remembered it again. Somebody spoke to a musician. They said, like, a dancer, who's the best dancer ever? And people usually say Frank Sinatra or Michael Jackson. He said Grace Kelly, because she did everything Frank Sinatra did,
but in heels.
And I thought, backwards and in heels. It's not a little thing.
If you can dance in a club for 4 or 5 hours in heels, you can do anything.
Yeah. Until you're like in your mid-50s and you're like, your butt hurts and your ankles hurt and you know
they're wearing the heels. It seems like a torturous thing. Do you get used to that? Or is it you're putting it on knowing you're doing it?
At the end of the night, it's not the best feeling in the world is taking your heels off and putting your foot down.
But when you're in them, is that...
Okay, but not for me, because I think I've been wearing heels longer than you're even alive. And so my slippers actually have a heel. I don't like being flat. I can't. Like, the feeling of my feet touching the floor, like flat, it's super strange for me. Like, even my heels have to be like, my slippers have to be.
I worked in a bar once and there was a girl, she was only about 18, quite something that just liked dress up. She must have gone into fashion. And I noticed I'm not kidding you. I swear to God, I was behind the bar and I was walking and I noticed she wasn't allowed to wear the heels. She was standing on her tiptoes because she was so used to it. She said, I only wear heels. Mm. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a joke. I just noticed. I said, what are you doing? She said, oh, no, I like standing like this.
Calves.
Yeah, she was quiet. Yeah. And I can't say anymore. But anyway, so she was a nice girl.
Obviously, you're into fitness.
Yeah.
And you've got your fitness video.
Right.
I actually tried that the other day.
You did?
I did.
Okay, they're just little tidbits, right?
I did like, the volume too. Okay. I tried it so hard. But I loved it that you brought your daughter into it as well.
Yeah.
Does she really enjoy that? Does she normally do stuff with you?
You know what? I'm hoping that my influence goes in there somewhere, because she is fit and she likes to do kickboxing. She's 16, so she doesn't want to hang out with her mom and do stuff yet. Mm. But I think there'll be a day, you know, she wants to sign up for Pilates. So, like, it's starting to...
It's so important to get things into kids before they know they're doing stuff.
That we did it.
That it's a struggle.
Right. You have to do it very, in your face. So that, like, it goes in there and they don't know that you were the one that put it in there.
Yeah.
Plant the seed.
They have to do it on their own, sort of.
That's what I do with my partner. Plant the seed.
I was just saying, I was speaking to the composer.
Composer.
Mm-hmm.
What is the conductor?
The conductor is like an orchestral conductor, somebody who more like a musical director would be a conductor.
The guy
So he's basically conducting all the instruments.
Okay, so he's a conductor.
Composer is somebody who actually composes or writes.
No, he's a conductor.
It.
Anyway, I was speaking to him. Do you know the Montessori schools that they have a lot of in America?
Yeah.
I spoke to somebody over here. Now, from what I found out, they're quite sort of franchisey. Like, you can run them how you want, as long as a certain thing to do with Maria Montessori, who I love, and it annoys me people don't really know who she is. But, speaking to the lady over here, and what they were doing over here, so their whole thing is like education the way it used to be. You know, they use the, what's the Latin for education? Is it educatus? Which means to bring from within. You bring that person out. We're the opposite. Sit down and I'm going to tell you. It's literally the opposite of what the word meant. And she said, they do, because we were talking about schools in South Africa, where he's from. And he said, I was explaining to him that they would do things that are so, like, you go, of course, where they have kids start school, but not till like 10 o'clock, because what they want to do is they want the kid itching to get out the house so that when they're allowed to go to school, they see it as a pleasure. And then you think, what do? Wake up, get dressed, drag you. So the whole thing, the way you look at it, is like a punishment, really.
Yeah.
She said, no, we want the kids to want to get out the bloody door. Mm. And then they pull it. And then they say, what we do is we just watch them. That's it. Mm. The onus for their education is just watching them. And they see.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, that guy, that kid, he just stacks bricks. Mm. That girl's doing everybody's hair. Mm. This girl's running around helping people. And they go, oh, that's it. They're telling you who they are. And then they just nudge them within those areas to see where they are. I thought, that's what a school is. That's what a school. And then you think back to what we are. Wake up, shut up. Yeah, all of you, all the personalities.
Teenagers.
I hate to get up in the morning. Yeah. I needed more sleep.
Yeah. Teenagers do. That's the thing.
Yeah, they actually do.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I think it probably used to make sense when the reason why it was like such a structured system was because, you know, people were going to work, so they needed to drop their kids off at a certain time so that they can go to work. And like, you know, the kids were, there was a reason obviously for this, but now it doesn't need to be like that. And especially now with a lot of things are online, and, you know, my kid's school was canceled the other day because it was a straight train strike, but everything went online.
Yeah.
So
did they have a better time when it was online, when they're at home? Or is it more like,
One day is fun.
Yeah.
Like, but then, you know, during COVID, that wasn't fun.
I think we don't know what people need at the moment. And I think human beings have to be around other human beings. Smells, feels, touches, noise, moving within people. It's like when people say you go to university. You're really going there to learn how to be an adult. It's not about the teaching as much. You
it's
need
a social
to
social element, yeah, as well.
Well, Stephen Fry, you know Stephen Fry, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and he said, he was talking about Alfred Bosey and Oscar Wilde, but the point stands where Oscar Wilde was talking to Alfred Bosey, but he was repeating this as you go there to learn manners. So it's called the Oxford Manor. You go there to learn how to be from a teenager to perfect. That's what you actually learn. Because he says to Alfred Bosey, you know, you've got the education, but you didn't learn the manners that are supposed to come with it. You didn't get what you're supposed to get from it. But yeah, so that's cool. When I talked to that lady, but I thought, when she told me that, then you look back to what we do and you go, oh my God, we just cram a load of kids in a class, different personalities, and say, listen, we're going to teach all this. And if some of you don't fit in, then I hope come from a good family, because you're going to end up where it just you don't fit in, and it could be abuse. If we're telling you this and you can't learn that, then we're technically abusing. We're crushing you in here and hoping that, you know, if you haven't got a good family, okay, good luck. If the work doesn't work out,
a lot of people don't fit into the system.
No,
well, it's Victorian. In the future, it's going to be Victorian. We crushed a load of kids into a class and said, "All listen to me."
It was very much like, you know, open a book when I was in school. All right, now copy from what's on the board. And I couldn't concentrate or read for that long. I was creative. I needed to be standing up. I needed to be learning creatively.
I reckon you could have a schooling system in the future where they get to sort of 12 or 13 and the teachers have to write something and say, look, they're going that way. Don't do this to them. 12, 13, by 13, you know that kid is not going to be a scientist. He's never shown any interest in anything, but he's running around playing sports constantly. Give him the basics, half of what they teach the maths kids. Give them the basics and then push the other ones in there. Mm. That one likes architecture, building stuff, or creative design, building, whatever, you know, whatever. I don't know what they call the classes now. He's not going to be a geographer. Why are we spending all this time? But that one loves geography. He reads them in his book. Do you know, it's just like such basic stuff that you will look back and go, my God, it's mad.
I agree with you. And then, like, the American system is liberal arts, right? So like you don't, it's not like here where you have to keep narrowing down your scope. So by the time you're GCSE, you're dropping this, you're dropping that. A levels, you've dropped everything except for three. So like it gets really, really narrow. And then by the time you go to uni, you're studying one thing.
Yeah.
Where I think that the liberal arts program is great for like the kids to be able to still be exposed to things. And I agree with you, but I also, my daughter was almost about to drop math, this was her weakest subject. And we were always so quick to prejudge and go, okay, she's not going to do the science. She's not going to do the math. Like she's more into the, you know, the humanities kind of stuff. And fine. Great. All of a sudden she's taking maths for A level and she's killing it. I mean, I want to speak too soon, but like she's loving it.
Yeah.
So it also has to do with how it's presented.
Yeah.
So it's the teachers.
Oh, there's a lot of facets.
There's a lot of elements to why a student may or may not like a certain thing, because like she was loving philosophy back in during GCSE, loving it, loved everything about it, loved all the ethical conversations and like just loved it. By the time it got to A level, wasn't a huge fan of it. And I mean, you know, yes, also the curriculum changes a little bit at A level. It gets a little bit harder and there's more challenges, you know, but also it's there's so many different reasons why a kid. So keeping the spectrum broad, this way they can be exposed to everything and then start to narrow it down later in life. So that, I mean, that, my kids all went to school in the States, university in the States, because they didn't have to choose right away what they really wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it became narrower, you know, at uni level. Mm. But
so what did you do at school? What was your...
I was the drama, music, theater, English. Those were my focuses. I was not a science and math person.
Yeah.
My daughter is like telling me about quadra, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you are speaking complete Chinese to me. I don't know what you're saying.
And so
like,
does she enjoy the fitness?
My daughter?
Yeah.
Does she like
fitness? Does she know what's going on?
No. She loves, you know, dance. In fact, she's starting, she's doing a charity dance troupe for, Ukrainian refugees, families who were displaced during the war. And so, like, all these kids who, let's say, used to like to dance. And so she's putting this together with the Ukrainian church and, all by herself, you know, like, so she's very much into her dance. She did dance GCSE. So dance is really her form of fitness. She loves it. Now it's kind of expanded into like kickboxing and other things.
Seen like her mum, so entrepreneurial, going out there, going to fabric designers and stuff like that. And so she's like, well, I'm going to do something big. I'm going to be entrepreneurial with it, you know?
We'll see. Okay. I mean, we'll see where this goes. I mean, if anything, it's just also showing the initiative that she wants to put something together that like, and I love that sort of like, you're right, maybe she's watching it, but that she could start something from nothing. I guess that is a bit of an entrepreneurial spirit where you can build something from just an idea. Yeah. We'll see if it takes off. I don't know. Maybe there are only two kids that show up.
Did you make a conscious effort to introduce them to things, or they just did as young kids?
No, we did. We put them into like the local dojo to learn judo and karate. And like, you know, they were so cute, but then they like were like not into it, you know, but they exposed it to, you know, you want them to try everything.
I knew a guy, I worked in a nightclub. It wasn't a lofty profession. And he said his niece, who was, oh God, I don't know, she might think she's about 5 or 6. He said, I don't have a lot of money. He said, but when we go to places, I make sure they're expensive places because I want to normalize it for her. He said, I take her to places where she only looks down at the menu, not up at the menu. Mm. And I thought, that's a genius.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah. And he said, because if I do that enough, you can't control who she likes when they grow old. You can't start complaining about people that she fancies or whatever she's dating. She said, but if I introduce her to a certain level of things now, before she knows any different, then when she goes on a date, and the guy tries to take her to somewhere else, she will naturally
be like, this guy's a cheapskate.
Yeah, I don't like
McDonald's. You're getting a Big Mac and a Happy Meal.
It was, don't take them anywhere where they look up at a menu.
That's very funny. I love that.
It works, have them fine dining, nice, quiet people.
I'm absolutely going to be telling that to my daughter.
Yeah.
Do not, I mean, exactly. Only look at menus. That's this way, not that way.
Yeah, that's just that side. I mean, what's the film, The Bronx Tale? Have you seen it? Robert De Niro on it.
100 years ago.
Yeah. It's a good story. Just didn't do very well. But he has the rule. That the cars were before they had electric things. You had to pull the things. I pull, go around and turn the key. When he goes on a date, he would let the girl in first. And he said, she's only good if she leans across to open your door for you. Mm-hmm. Like, because you have to. If you have to go around and put your key in, that means she just sat there. She's probably quite selfish. But if you get in and he does it, he goes on a date and she gets in the car and she does that and locks the door in front of her. Ah, little thing. But, I mean, they're sort of...
You can't do that anymore.
No, yeah.
No.
They're sort of gimmicky.
I have to say, it is a bit tricky for boys. I have 3 boys. It is very tricky. I want to teach my kids to be like, you know... a gentleman, you know, I want them to be able to like offer to hold the door open or to help an old lady with their bags or, you know, like I want my kids to be like, to be kind and be nice and offer and to help.
But nowadays, you've got to be careful.
You have to understand like the, you know, going to fancy places and stuff like that. But I don't know. I quite like going to my local pub. My first date with my boyfriend was going to a local pub. It was in Romford. And it was just
oh,
like,
it's not one or the other.
It was just like, it was really, you know, the drinks were cheap and because we were really young. And
well, yeah. I mean, obviously, and, when you're yeah, that young, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not splashing the cash.
But I would still like it now because it doesn't have to be showy for me. As long as he can make me laugh, he's got good morals.
Yeah, no, it's not about leading a posh life. Just, yeah. It's just introducing them to a way that makes some sort of.
True. And I agree because then you also know that it's special when you go to someplace else.
Like, and so I'll tell you something else he said. He said he's not religious, doesn't believe in religion anyway, almost to the point of atheism, but he just doesn't believe nothing. His wife's a little bit religious. He said, I go to church with them every Sunday. It's the Catholic Church, his wife. He said he's not into it. His wife's not really into it, but they've made a conscious decision. We're going to go to church every Sunday. He doesn't believe in it. He said, but when you teach them religion young enough, he said, even if they don't believe in it, it puts in the back of your mind for the rest of your life, there might be somebody watching. You might not believe in it, but even if you don't believe in it.
What? Catholic guilt.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
No, but just, they're not following any, it's not like they're going to Sunday school or anything. He said, but if you just keep talking about God's love, when you're not there, there's 0.5% of them is just still thinking, I've got it. He might be there watching me.
That, we all grew up with it. Yeah. And you know what? Even when you're trying not to, it's still there, you know.
Again, genius. He didn't know that. I thought this, as you get older, you realize, oh, I was just talking to him and he was saying these things. I thought, it's not bad.
I'm sure I did that with my kids.
Please tell us about Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg. How did we get from religion to Snoop Dogg?
I mean, it happened. Yeah. Like, well, how did you meet? How did it come about?
So I ended up like having this great manager like back right after I had my first hit record. And it was, I don't know how you know, if you know the story, but like I, the way I sort of came back out into the world and decided I was going to record an album was I was going to do it for a charity because I mean, what, like, I'm like this almost 40-year-old person. Nobody's heard of me. How am I going to get into the music business? So I aligned myself with a charity and obviously I've been in the business. I was able to mentor some of the younger kids. And, it's called Music for Youth. And it's a charity that like provides platforms for kids all over the country to like perform. But I had this idea. I was like, okay, back to the conversation we had earlier that there is a difference between performing live on stage and recording in a studio. And so I'm like, is there a way that we can give some of these kids who are so super extraordinarily talented from around the country the opportunity to record an album? Because that is another level of creativity. So they were like, okay, we love this. How are we going to do this? So I actually went around the country to the school's proms, at like literally, and I adjudicated some of the like events. And we literally chose some of the top choirs, strings, bassists, guitarists, and we bussed them into London over the course of a couple of days while I was recording this album of Motown tracks. And we were making it into like, I wanted to give it like an airy kind of cool vibe where it was like, we were just going to rock out. I wanted everything on this album. I wanted from strings to choirs. I just wanted to make it rock and roll. Anyway, we did. And obviously the kids, these are classic songs. So even the kids recognize it. And I was trying to teach them that if you could take any song from any era and make it your own. And so we work with incredible producers to like, you know, so the kids got a great experience out of that. Anyway, there was a DJ, that was affiliated with Music for Youth and they remixed one of the tracks on this record. And suddenly, like a month later, this record is sitting between Lady Gaga and the Scissor Sisters on the charts, on the commercial pop charts and the dance club charts and I'm like, and the EDM charts. I'm like, okay, this is really strange. Like, this was not my intention. Like, I was literally here. And then, like, this door opened over there for me to, like, so I get calls from producers saying, you know, your vocal really suits the genre of music. Would you be interested in writing an album of dance tracks? I'm like, now this is someone that grew up in the 80s. I grew up on, you know, 80s rock and synth pop and, you know, fitness music. So I love dance music, but like, you know, the European dance music industry was not anything that I was familiar with because like it wasn't huge in the States or in Canada when I was growing up, like totally different EDM, you know, house that, like that. So I had to learn the tricks of the trade and And so I worked with incredible producers at the time. That was just my vocal. And then it was, I was writing. Then I had this crazy dream and, about my late father visiting me in this dream, telling me that this is my time. This is the path that I should be on. This is my dream and I should follow my dream. And it was a very vivid dream. My dad had died a few years before. It was the first. And by the way, last time I've ever actually seen my dad, like in any form, I mean, right? And I'm not really like into that old ghost stuff, but a lot of things had happened during that day that were really freaky and creepy and scary and ghostly. And
like a send you a message.
So crazy. So anyway, so I ended up writing this song called Live It Up. And it was literally, the lyrics are about living my dream, and I saw a ghost, and like I wrote the song about my dad. And my manager at the time said, you know, you've got a hit record now, because I had that song out with the charity that like was sitting in the charts now for 10 weeks. And so I'm, you know, and I really wanted a rap on this song. So I actually thought I'd visit some of these Music for Youth kids. Like, they're up and coming, you know, rappers. This is a great experience for them. And he's like, no. I know, you know, a lot of the gangster rappers back in the day, because this manager was also like, you know, you can look him up. He's been everywhere and everywhere. He's like Forrest Gump of the music industry. And Stephen said, I'm gonna get you with Snoop Dogg. He's gonna love this. I'm like, first of all, what the hell are you smoking? Like,
are you
like,
still in England at this point?
Yeah, this has all happened in England. I'm now here for like 23 years, so I mean, this has all happened in England. So Stephen, who's from America but was living here as well, he's like, I'm gonna introduce it to. He's gonna love this. He's gonna love the story. He's gonna love you. You guys have kids the same age. You guys are gonna love each other. I'm like, Stephen, really, this is like the, I mean, you know, people say things all the time. I'm going to make you a star, you know, like, and you're like, okay, yeah, whatever. But meanwhile, so I was on a plane to the States. I mean, wow. He listened to the record, loved the story, loved the track, the whole thing happened so fast. And so it was crazy. And, you know, this was at the time where Snoop was literally doing everything. He was just getting on every bandwagon. Dance music, yep, tick that box. Stacey Jackson Fitness, yep, that's good. You know, and then he started putting his name to everything. Martha Stewart, yeah, let's do a show, you know, cooking. So we caught him while he was at a place where he was, like, I guess, going commercial. I don't know.
Like, yes, man, isn't he? Yeah, I'm going to say yes to everything.
That's great. I mean, but it was my luck, right? Yeah. So anyway, so, and also, I mean, it's a good song. So I, yeah. 10 years later, the record was in a movie called Reboot Camp. I ended up doing a cameo performing the song. And it's now, it's as if there was like a discovery of Stacey Jackson music in South America. It's gone crazy over there. So I'll be doing some shows in South America this coming summer. It's really crazy how this song just keeps coming back for me. And so that's, I mean, a long story short, that's how I ended up with Snoop Dogg.
And the name of your book,
so is how a gangster rapper made me a better
and
mom.
Why
did he make me a better mom? Well, the message is actually that, you know,
was it he made you a better person.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's because the message is really that if you're not going to do what you love to do, then there is no way you're going to be fully happy with who you are. Like, if you're not happy within yourself, somebody said to me, you can never do anything creative, or you can, you know, like, I'd be like, I wouldn't be a whole person, you know, like, I love my children, but they're not my depth. They don't define me. I mean, I'm a mummy, but they don't define me. And what defines me is my creativity, my personality. You know, I have other things about me that like make me me. And if I didn't have that, then I probably wouldn't be so happy. And not being happy with yourself, there is no way you could be a happy mother, or you could be a happy wife, or a happy sister, or a happy friend. Yeah. You have to be loving what you do. Like, I always tell people, like, if you're stuck in a rut and you're stuck in a job you really, really hate, find something else. Yeah. Life is too short to be doing crappy stuff.
I love that, because obviously, like, the woman in my early 30s, I'm now thinking about that. I'm thinking about kids. I'm thinking about this. And I know a lot of women that are wanting to have kids, they're like, oh, well, I have to give up my career, or you know, I haven't really started my life yet. I haven't really started my, what I want to do, you know, but then I do want kids in the future. What comes first? And I love the fact that you've, you know, you've had the kids and, you know, you're an amazing mum and you're like, actually, I just want to go out there. I want to do what I want to do now. Was there a little bit of guilt behind that? Did you like, was there mm-hmm. a bit of like, yeah, mum guilt, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the juggling. I mean, yeah. But I think this with every career and every working mother, no matter what they do. For me, it's a little bit more intense because I had to tour for weeks at a time. I'm walking around in hot pants and heels and my kids are like, you know, going through puberty or adolescence. And my kids are like, mom, you're so embarrassing. So, I mean, you know, because it wasn't like I was going, you know, I wasn't going back to law school or something. I wasn't like, I didn't decide to like make jewelry.
Did you have to ever actually was there a defining moment where you did you ever have a thing where you sat down with your husband and said, listen, did it come to it? Did it just happen?
No, there were lots of like, we had to work on this because right. like yeah. my mother had to come in and fill some gaps because I mean, I still had young kids, you know, so even though I had some of them were older already, but like, you know, even my daughter, she was still like, you know, 3 or 4 years old. She's only 16 now, right? So she was young. So my mother would come over and stay and fill the gaps if I was away for 2 weeks at a time. Okay. And that's as long as I was away. So it was really hard because like to break it in the industry, the thing about the music business, as everyone knows, is a maze. It's not, I mean, you know, don't even get me started about how we chase revenues in this business. It's like, it's crazy. I mean, since you're chasing pennies, but you have to commit. You have to really commit. So how do you make money? You merch, you tour, you, so, but I couldn't fully do that. I couldn't be on the road for 6 months at a go. You know, I had to, it was like, I'd go for 10 days, come back. Mm-hmm. I'd go for another 10 days, come back. I just, so it was even harder for me to try to secure my place in the music industry because I was kind of like, I don't want to say held back by my family because that's not, but I mean, I was a little bit restricted because, you know, I don't want to leave my babies for
emotionally
so long.
Yeah.
You have to accept the reality and then just work with whatever your reality is at that time.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Did you have to have a conversation as well, being like, okay, guys, if I blow up and, you know, because the family be in the public eye as well, did you have to have that conversation? Like, how do you feel about it? If I'm in the public eye and I've got stuff written about me and you may be in the public eye as well.
Like the reality thing.
Yeah,
they just said, look,
was that
it's not
like
happening.
A conversation you had to have as well?
Yep, we did. We did. It was, you know, I mean, sometimes like they'll do a red carpet with me if I'm taking them to a movie premiere or something fun.
Oh, we did that
know?
For you.
Yeah, yeah.
but like very, very low key stuff. Yeah. I mean, because you'll see them in some pictures with me, you know, in the press, but very low key stuff. They don't want to have anything to do with it. That's why they were like, no. Even with the book, they're like, you better fictionalize it. Everything has to be fictionalized. So they're like, oh, mom, you said 3 kids instead of 4, you know. then they're like, which one did you drop? I'm like, but
so you know, any husband? Did you like use his name?
I killed the husband.
But
off,
I killed the husband.
You know?
So.
Like, so, I mean, honestly, you know, obviously any author who's going to write anything, no matter what, they have to. They're pulling on influences from their lives. They're pulling on experience from their lives. They're pulling on some memory from their life. Obviously, there's some, you know, there's an Italian best friend in the, I mean, one of my best friends is Italian. So yeah, there's a little bit of her in there, but I mean, small teeny weeny, like everything is fictionalized. Yeah. So anybody who reads the book, if they think that they actually see them in there, it's not. If I've offended anyone,
it's accidental. I assure you,
totally accidental. No, but I mean, you know, because you need a protagonist and an antagonist, and there's always, you know. So, but it was really fun to write, and so it'll be
Have
ready.
You got any thoughts about writing another book? Is it done
yeah,
something?
So it's meant to be a trilogy. Oh. So the first one is How a Gangster Rapper Made Me a Better Mom. The second one is when she goes and starts her fitness line of clothes and ends up in China. And so at the moment, it's called A Vagina in China, but I think we might have to change that for various reasons.
I would
I'm
read it.
I'm not sure that's, yeah, okay. So working time.
Isn't it Vagina Monologues?
Like, well, exactly. Yeah. So, but there is a reason for the title. And then the third one is I'm Too Young to Be This Old, which is when the character ends up in a movie and basically shit hits the fan and like there's some pervy producers and like just, you know, so like the sort of Me Too stuff happens. And so it is a journey and obviously loosely based on my experiences. And, you know,
it's like this morning. Have you watched This Morning?
I didn't watch This Morning.
This Morning. One with Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, The Morning Show.
The Morning Show. That's
Yeah. I was just talking about it the other day. Yeah.
It's kind of like that, you know. Is that how you're thinking of the third one to go?
Oh, a little bit. I mean, because there is some truth to it. I mean, I was, you know, in real life, I was commissioned to write, to be in a show, in a movie. And then I was commissioned to write the soundtrack for, because it was a musical movie. And I never ended up getting off the ground, and there was, you know, stuff that went on. So there's inspiration to be pulled on that. But remember, the character is fictional. Mm. So, but, you know, that's what I say with every author. They have, like, they're going to have their own life and their journey to, like, you know.
Well, you are your experience. You can only see your experience.
And it's more authentic, you know.
Yeah. You know. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, the book was option to become a TV series before I even wrote a word. So who knows, if we'll see if I get to write the second and third book, and we'll see if it does well. Mm-hmm. What's nice about it is, so it's soft launch is Christmas. Then it actually, we're going to have a big launch in London in February, and then it releases in April in the US. Mm-hmm. So I have to go to the US to do a big tour. And then the audiobook comes out, and I wrote an entire soundtrack for the book. So it's actually a musical book, but you'll only get the music when it's released on audio form. And then if you already own the physical book, there's a QR code at the back of the book that will have all the music in it.
Wow.
So
have you got your London location sorted for the release?
It's in Soho, I think.
Oh, nice.
Like, literally around the corner.
Will there be lots of champagne and kisses on both cheeks?
Yeah, well, you want an invitation?
We're looking forward to our invitation.
Yeah, so I think, yeah.
I'll end up doing the security, just sticking on the door.
We were just looking at venues, actually. We're looking at venues again this week, so we'll narrow it down. My publisher gave me a list of things, but, like, we want to keep it local. And because there's stuff happening, it needs to be, like, the right venue. It has to have a good PA system. And so
would you be singing at the event as well?
That will be a surprise.
So your inspiration of your music is very much, is it like the 80s, like, sort of dance tracks? And
funnily enough, is yes.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, with anything creative that I do, I'm pulling up on my own life, right? Mm. So, like, even, like, forget the book, even my music, you know, I'm authentically an 80s girl, right? So all of the influences for me have to come from that sort of world. I lived through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. So, like, when I'm writing a song, I have that in my head. Like, that's how, you know, so I love those sounds. So it's just funny that it's become so on trend, you know, like the 80s with, you know, Stranger Things.
Yes.
Exactly.
Hate
and
Bush, you know.
Exactly. And then I landed this show. I did Stacey Jackson in the 80s for 3 seasons on Sky. And it was just a fluke and a half. I auditioned, like, totally. I was like, I'm never going to get this job. First of all, I don't sound British. I thought maybe it was like they're going to want, like, the British kind of, you know, version of the 80s. And I'm like, it wasn't that. I mean, obviously, there was a British invasion in the 80s. We got a lot of 80s music. But still, you guys had, British music. But you guys had, like, a lot of, you know, songs that didn't cross the pond. So I was learning along the way as well when I was hosting the show. And I got to, when I got the job, they were going to use a stock record for me to, you know, introduce.
Flip side.
Yeah, I know. But I was a bit cheeky. And I was like, they're going to probably fire me for asking. But I went to the producers. I'm like, you know, I wrote this song. It could work for the show. I don't know. If you don't like it, don't worry. We don't have to use it. We can use something else, you know, an 80s song. And they're like, no, this is great. We love it. And so I gave them the song. And then we were getting on social media, like, what song is this? Is this an 80s song? Like, I don't never heard it before. And then it just grew. And I realized we never released the song. Mm. We gave it to the show to use, but it was never available on Spotify. It wasn't available. You couldn't even listen to it if you wanted to. So we ended up releasing it. And then, like, 6 months later, it became number one. So it's just random.
That's amazing. Did you give it to the show? Were they ownership of it?
No, I own it.
Yeah, but it was kind of like,
but I did. We didn't even
lend it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, when it plays, I get some royalty, I guess, from it. But I mean, there was no plan.
Is there anything new on the horizon? Is there anything you haven't done? There's something in the back of your head.
Yeah. Okay. What's new?
Acting.
Acting. Yeah. I'm always dabbling in the acting. No, I. The book is a big deal for me. Like, that's like, you know, another sort of feather in the cap, I guess.
Do you enjoy writing it? Or was it just everything in your head?
I did, but thank God I had Ruth there. I honestly, like, she spent, like, months interviewing me and, like, you know, just really, like, understanding. Because we needed the character to have my voice, even though it wasn't me. So she, you know, she does grow. She has grown up in Canada, not the same town or anything. But, like, there's... It was important that the character had me in her, you know?
Is your husband British?
Mm-mm, he's from New York.
How did you end up over here then? 25 years ago, you said?
Yeah, almost 24 years ago, yeah.
What was the process?
Well, it was actually with his job, and we were only going to come for 2 years. It was one of those, like, you know, expat packages where they're like, we'll send you here for 2 years, and you'll go back to New York. And I was working in television as a PR, and I just had like a baby, a second baby, and we were moving with two little babies in tow. And so I was like, for sure, we're going to make this an adventure. We're going to like travel. We'll do some city breaks. We'll go to Italy. We'll go to France. This is fabulous. We even kept our like little easy pass, you know, to go through the tolls in New York City. We were like, we're going home. We're going back to New York. But we just loved it here.
So thinking back, what was it you liked?
First of all, my career took off here as well. But that wasn't the reason why we liked it. I mean, we really felt like, first of all, it was very civilized. We're urban people, but I love culture and I love the art. I love the arts. I love that you can just go to a museum. Like, I could walk. I live in the city. Yeah. So you can go anywhere. I love walking around Soho. I love going to shows. I love going to the that's why I love New York, you know, but this is a little bit more civilized. Yeah. It's got lots of green. Oh. I mean, the weather isn't that great, but today has been amazing, so I'm not going to complain.
But you can't enjoy because you don't know what it's going to be.
You don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
But you've got an umbrella in your bag. Yeah. You've got like
suntan lotion in the other one.
And then I had another baby we just got comfortable. And then we're like, maybe we should sell our apartment in New York and stay here. So it wasn't planned. It was one step after another.
And have you got any other plans in terms of locations in the future, apart from your sort of where the career goes? Is this your place for the foreseeable?
We're going to have our base here for sure.
Oh, you said
because
you just
my
moved,
kid,
haven't you?
We just moved, but my kids are also like, they grew up here. So like, even though they're all over the world, when they come, this is where they come to come home. So, and it's very rare that we're all together in London, though. Like, because, like, you know, my kids who live in the States don't get any holiday. And the one in Stockholm, you know, he comes, you know, every sort of other week he can come down, which is great. So he'll sleep on the rollout couch, you know. But when we're away as a family, it's usually like we're on holiday somewhere. So we're never really in London together.
Did you ever move to Essex? Because I know that you've got, so your recording studio, isn't it? And Hornchurch?
Yeah. Yes. Why, are you from there?
I'm from Essex.
Oh, that's hysterical. No,
when you said Hornchurch, I was like, oh my God, I used to live like a couple of miles down from
that's here. That's hilarious. Yeah, where, so the studio where we filmed Stacey Jackson in the 80s was there. And I would go every month, I would go record 4 or 5 episodes at a go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What did you think of it? Like, because I always think
it was beautiful.
Because people who live in London, I asked them, I'm like, have you ever been to Essex? Like, no.
Anything outside of London. Yeah. You might as well just talk another country.
But there's just so many beautiful places.
But you know, there's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm still a bit of a tourist 23 years. I love it. It's like, I go out to East to do the show. Obviously, we're not recording it anymore, but like, I was religious about it every month. Mm-hmm. And then I have, you know, I have friends who live up in the north and I have friends who live out west but they're not like, it's suburban. Like, it's not like I don't feel like I'm going to the country. I mean, you know, but their houses are beautiful. They've got space.
Got so much more.
They've got.
I always say like, going to Essex, like, it's like a pin drop after 8 o'clock where I live, because it's like a tiny little town and everyone's kind of retired. And that's why I love coming into the city, because I'm like, oh my God, people.
Oh no, it's crazy. I get all the parades in front of my house. Like,
but it's quite nice going. And then I'm like, oh, I can go back to, you know, sit in the garden and hear nothing.
Where did you moved to Mayfair and moved to Chelsea?
Yeah, no, I was living in Chelsea. Now we live in Westminster.
Do you go out there? Like, is there like coffee shops and things, or do you always have to go right into the?
No. I mean, like, you know, we're I guess like transplants. We just like to live around Hyde Park.
Right,
like Hyde Park for us is like the center of the universe, and we've lived literally from, you know, in a few houses. You know, when we first moved over, we lived also like in earshot of Hyde Park. And then we when we sold our house in New York, we moved to Chelsea, which was also but like, if I can't run in Hyde Park, it's too far.
Yeah.
You know, I need to.
About 15 years ago, I was a delivery driver. I can't remember what I was delivering, but I'll never forget this. I went to, I delivered a package and it was in Chelsea and I'd never been there before. So it felt like another world because I was from East London. And it was, I remember describing it as some of the, because I said what happened. It's like the size of a VCR box I had to deliver. And I opened it, the door, knocked on the door, and the door opened.
That was very 80s, by the way, a VCR box.
Yeah, no, because it was from the, so I was just trying to, everyone would know what VCR, well, I'm saying, no, I've got, yeah. Anyway, so,
you have a child at the table.
I know
what I was VCR. Thinking DVD, and I was like, no, that doesn't work. There's no physical medium anymore. Yeah, had this amount of storage.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I opened the guy opened the door, and it was a butler. And I didn't really know they were still existed. Like, I honestly realized that, like, this was a one house. I thought it was like a load of houses, just one thing. Anyways, you opened it and it was a butler and he looked like a butler. And I thought, oh, and I went, oh, I got this package, right? And he went, no, you have to go around the other side. This, and I was like, right. I didn't understand. And I was like, okay. So I went around the other side. He opened the door and took the package off me, ran the other side. Wasn't even a different person. And I was like,
oh, so there was a special
You know, they have servants.
Where
they but you've got to get somebody. Or you can't then walk around and go, just, thank you.
Imagine he just walked really fast.
Well, maybe he wasn't allowed to walk through the property.
No, because that's what I
was holding a box.
No, I thought if it was a fridge and I was on, you know, something that was
like a dolly.
It was just a clean box. I thought, if I was butler and I was not allowed to take any boxes through there, I would have to get somebody else to say, listen, do me a favor. Go. I cannot go around. I cannot take the box. I cannot answer the
box. I guarantee you, if the people were not in the house, he would have taken the box. He probably delivered it when the principals were in the house they might have,
but
like,
to have those rules and you're like, there's everything going on in the world. That's the
dumbest thing ever.
And I sort of went, is that, that's the bloke? And I thought, and then I felt, am I embarrassed for him? Or am I annoyed that?
Yeah, we're both embarrassed, you know.
Oh, God, that's my only Chelsea story I've got anyway. Yeah. But you're enjoying living around there. You're fitting in. Okay.
Yeah, we love it. I mean,
where do you tend to go out with everything going on? Where do you go out to? Do you have like a regular thing?
I love theater.
Like at least once a month.
I actually went to go see the immersive Guys and Dolls show, which was spectacular.
Why is it immersive?
Everyone has to go. So it's immersive because it's not like you're just watching.
Is that part of the show?
Yes,
being
you're
immersive?
Like, oh, okay, you're, the people who are watching the show are actually involved in it.
Oh,
so
it's
the
like
stage, the stage moves, the characters move, and so it's brilliant. Oh. I mean, I just loved it. And I went to see the ABBA Voyage, you know, like with the 3D hologram.
Oh, the hologram thing. Yeah.
I really wanted to go see that.
That was so fun. I mean, like, this is like, I still am a bit of a tourist here. Every time I have the people visiting, I'm like, okay, what are we doing? Where are we going? Which show? I've seen Hamilton like 5 times. So like, I'm still like, I'm such a big, like a million times.
Oh my God, I love it so much.
Last time I took my brother, he had never seen it. He just laughed his butt off. But we, you know, so like, this is what I love London. Because if you could take advantage of it and do the shows and do the museums and do the, you know, and we have our favorite local Italian restaurant and we belong to a few clubs as well. And like,
What's your favorite club to go to?
You know, I would have said, it used to be Annabelle's, like back in the day, but they've changed. Lulu's is fun, you know.
Or the box.
Yeah, the box is cool. That's one of the potential places we're going to have the party. So we'll see.
Oh my God, the box is amazing.
We'll see. I mean, it's just being accessible is important to me. I just like, that's like the freedom. I'm very lucky that I could live in the city. Like,
How did you end up in Liverpool? Did you go up there for that interview?
In Liverpool, oh, that's funny because I do have a regular radio show there.
That's what I thought. That must have been a one-off. That can't be a regular thing.
No, it's regular. It's every Thursday. So when I was doing the show
Liverpool, was it recorded remotely?
Yeah, it's
but you're not going up to Liverpool.
Not every month. No, not every day. Not every week.
You record them all.
We do it either remotely. So he patches me in. So I'll be on a. But I do go up there probably every other month, and I'll do the show live. But it's all, I'm their resident 80s expert, basically, on 80s music. So every week it's a different topic, a different theme.
What's the show?
It's Roy Basnett, and it's on Thursdays, Liverpool Live, every Thursday at 11.
How did that come about?
He just contacted my manager and just said, you know, would be great if you could do a regular spiel on the show, because he loves 80s music. He's probably about my age, and we just hit it off. And I said, okay, we'll do it. Like, I thought it was just one, we thought it was going to be just a one off, but we just had such great banter and we got on so well. And he's like, we're now thinking about doing regular podcasts, interviewing other people. We've brought on some 80s and 90s actors and musicians on the show, and it's just super fun. Yeah. I just love it, and I have a lovely fan base up in Liverpool. So it's
do you ever say to him, well, maybe you want to pop down here every other month? We'll just share it.
Yeah, sure.
But that'd be a great transition to go from, you know, what you're presenting and then going into podcasting and doing the 80s, because obviously you're in it and you know everything about it.
As I said to you before, I said, why don't people just do everything? Because you never know what's going to work. Because with all the will in the world, you never will know which one's going to click. Do you know what I mean? So why not do everything?
You're preaching to the choir, dude. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, but I keep thinking, well, maybe it's the ADHD, but actually I think it's my superpowers. ADHD. It's the fact that because my husband is very like your partner, where it's like, you know, just go from A to B, and you just take the car from A to B. You get from A to B, right? I'm like, no. I take the car, I go to D, L, M, to V, and then I'll get to B. Because you're right. Like, I don't know what's going to, I have a lot of things on the burner.
It's hard to explain that to people who don't get it. Like, I'm quite jealous sometimes of my partner's brain, because he's very much like, well, I'll just get paid for what I do, and then I enjoy my money afterwards, and this sort of stuff. And I'm just like, how do you have that kind of brain? How do you not explode? And he's just like, no, I like what I do.
It's weird. You can't. Are you sure you like what you do?
I can't relate at all.
He could easily just sit there and not talk to anyone during the day and just do his job. And I'm like, oh my God, I go insane because my head's all over the place. Mm. And it's hard to explain that to someone. Yeah. But
we obviously develop tools to manage that because like people who do have ADHD and haven't yet figured out how to manage the sort of, I call it the ping pong ball or the what's that game that everyone, oh my God, that's a brain freeze, you know, the pinball where the ball's going bing, 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 bing. You know, when you're a kid,
you still need the plastic to hold it in.
Otherwise it'll fly out. Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. When you're younger and I didn't know I had ADHD. I mean, I developed this sort of, I guess, tools to be able to handle it. So I have my own way of organizing things. My husband calls it organized chaos, but it is. 100%. I have no choice. I have to organize. He's like, why do you have 6,000 apps open? I'm like, because I'm in the middle of doing something and the doorbell rings or my kid stops me from, I'm like, but if I keep the page open, it's 3 hours later, I'll go back and like, oh yeah, I was ordering, you know, makeup remover from Boots, you know, and it's there, right?
If I go onto YouTube as well, that's it. I'm in a YouTube.
You're in the rabbit hole.
I'm in the YouTube hole. Yeah. I've got something open. I was actually on New Look. I was going to buy a load of clothes, but now I'm on YouTube. Oh no, I was actually on Daily Mail. I was actually looking up an article.
Oh my God,
but
you're like me.
That's literally what, and then I'm reading the comments in the Daily Mail. Now I'm on YouTube reading those comments.
Well, Ricky Gervais said it. We saw Ricky Gervais earlier, and he said it's hard to explain to people that I find it easier to do more things than one. Orson Welles.
Interesting.
I mean, they didn't know back then, because he would always have things on that were just nothing was getting done because he was doing everything. And he said, people like me, he said, you have to, I don't know if he's talking about creatives, but he said, I have to have too many things going to stop me doing nothing. Mm. He said, I even doing everything. Because I'll do nothing otherwise. Yeah. I have to do everything.
That's what I say about myself. I'm like, I'm everything and nothing at the same time. Because if I I have to be on a roller coaster. I have to be busy. If I'm not, then I'm not.
Brain's going faster than the world.
Yeah, I'll sit in bed and I'll do nothing. If I'm not doing a load of things at the same time, and I'm not keeping myself.
Okay, but when you say nothing, is it really nothing? Like, are you playing a game on your phone? Are you reading a book? Are you watching
still
Netflix? Are
I'm
you
still
doing
stimulating
something?
My brain.
Nothing. Yeah. What does nothing mean? Like, I can't even get a massage without watching TV. Oh, so my head's in the hole, okay? Mm. And I'll get a massage.
You're not watching TV during the massage.
Hand on heart, I am.
Really?
Yeah, because my brain...
I thought you'd just be writing a script underneath there. Yeah,
my brain cannot... So I'll be or I'll be even like on my emails.
Mm-hmm. See, I can't do that. Crazy. When I'm massaging, when I'm massaging. No, that's another...
You want to relax.
That's something else I do. I want to relax, but I'm also daydreaming. I'm also thinking about what I'm going to do next, what's going to come up afterwards, what I'm going to do now. And that allows my brain to chill. And I think but the one thing I love to do that completely... gets my brain out. I literally sit in the garden or watch my cat play.
Can't stimulate myself, dance for me, dance.
That's literally what I have to do. Or I'll draw, because I'm a drawer. I illustrate as well. So I'll literally, I have to have music in, because otherwise I will literally get distracted.
Okay, so you've already said you've done three things. You're watching your cat, doing your drawing, and you're listening to music at the same time.
These are different times, but like there's another thing I have to be drawing, but then I have to be listening at something at the same time, because otherwise something will distract me.
You have a lot of pets?
I've got one. I've got one cat.
One cat. Do you know they found something else about cats? You know how we just learn things? We think we know stuff, and then as we go on, we figure out, oh, we thought this was that, but it's that. You know when they talk about people that are allergic to pets? And they think like the hair, like I'm allergic to cats.
I am allergic to cats.
I'm sorry.
My throat closed, but it's fine. We're not smooching.
They're saying it's not the hair. They've now realized it's the saliva in the cat, but the cat licks the hairs. So you're actually allergic to the cat's saliva. And now they're looking into dogs. Is it the same for we're actually allergic to the thing inside their mouth?
But they're
licking the hair.
I was actually when I was really young, I grew out of it now, but I was allergic to dust mites feces.
Yeah.
I would literally be up scratching, but it was the dust mites feces. And I was like, really?
I knew a guy, get this right. So I did some menial work on the way up, right? And I had weird jobs. I was changing jobs like three times a year, and I worked in removals. And there was a guy there, and it was a lower end removals where you had half the people. There was a guy there I met. He had eczema everywhere, about 27, 28, constantly scratching with two hands. And I'm embarrassed now because I saw him, I said, you're all right. I thought it was just a temporary thing. I'm like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Gave him some stupid advice. I didn't realize he'd had it since a kid. He had the second worst case in England of eczema, like full body eczema, two hands since a child. He'd had to be hospitalized a lot of times. And I said, what sets it off? It said like things like sweat and dust in removals when you're sweating and you're moving dust. Both hands, right? So get this.
He should not be in that vocation.
No, 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 no. I mean, he couldn't read. I didn't. It was one of them jobs. Removals is a weird thing. It's when you can't do anything else. There's certain jobs you just fall down. You sort of filter down and then you end up in that job because you don't need to learn how to read. And it's a horrible job. Nobody wants to do it. People quit immediately after 15 minutes.
He was scratching with
two hands. I never saw him for more than a 15-second period where his hands didn't start going again for a year. And then I left, and then I saw him about a year and a half later. I was driving near the place and I saw him. I said, oh, do you want a lift? And I took him down there. I said, how are you doing? Like this, two hands everywhere. And he said, oh, I had to go to the hospital the other day. He said he got so bad. I couldn't ask.
Where do you live?
I just remember him. Whenever anything else about work or anything like, he's like one of five people I think of.
He's the, okay, that's like when I said like, change your life.
Yeah, exactly.
it's actually really causing harm.
It was those jobs where it was the jobs that caught everybody at the bottom. It was people that come out of jail, couldn't get a job because it was jobs nobody wanted to do. And you didn't have to have any, just turned up because they would just say, hire you on the spot because nobody wanted to do those jobs.
Well, that eczema is an issue. And that's why I started Stay Fit. Like, you know, the whole sort of after you sweat and then it gets trapped in, well, you wouldn't relate, but you were related. It gets trapped in the wrong places. And so I designed this based on that because I suffered from eczema. It's really horrible. And so I keep it at bay. But the thing about eczema, and this is the thing, it's you can't just try to fix it on the top.
Oh, no, it's inside.
It's really inside. So like people put the cream on and they're like, oh, it's better, you know, so then they stop the medicine. But you actually have to use the prescription for 2 weeks or 10 days or whatever it is, like religiously, because it needs to go into your skin under the layer where the actual you know, causes. Yeah, exactly.
To change your like food, your diet.
Yeah, you know, can, or what you use to wash your clothes or to bathe or like.
It's a reaction. It's the end of the road. It's the end to say there's
it's
a problem.
All internal, you know, whatever comes out of your body and you see.
We don't know what we're putting into our system, even in the air, between the air and the water, and the, you don't. We're going to catch up eventually and realize. Oh, do you remember when they used to do that? Yeah. And they used to wonder why that used to happen. But yeah, I think the simple, everything's simple. That's the main secret. Everything is simple, like food. Just drink a lot of water. Just if things fixed themselves for a long time.
Just look after yourself.
Yeah.
But going back to your music, we've got
to finish it. So go on. What have you got?
Yeah, yeah. I was just saying, are you working on anything else? Because I know you brought out Soldier was your last one. Yeah.
So the album is also called Superwoman, and it's coming out the beginning of the night. Beginning. 2024. The beginning of 2024. So we are going to release another single. It'll be called also Superwoman.
Love that.
And that'll come out kind of in line with the launch of the book.
Yeah.
So yeah. So that,
and
the
you
whole
will,
album
will not
will drop.
Be playing. Be you know singing at the
maybe,
launch.
At the book launch. We'll play.
Just close off. Is there anybody who do you, if I said to you. Who comes to your mind if I said the people you admire? From young, old, anything, who comes to your head? Doesn't have to be anyone specific, family, somebody in the media, books you read?
Yeah. Well, obviously my husband.
Yeah.
I think he's
we got that one out of the way.
Yeah, for sure. No, even though I killed him off in the book. Yeah. I don't know, because he's my biggest cheerleader. But I would say, like, I have a 94-year-old aunt who is a sculptress and in her 40s decided to go back to do something creative. And now she's like quite famous. She's 94 now, a sculptress. And she had like 3 kids in tow and she would like climb up these big, you know, marble plinths and like chisel away and unbelievable. Up until like 10 years ago, she was still chiseling away. So yeah, she's incredible. And she was a big inspiration. My mom also, I think like women who like my mother, she went back to school to become a sex ed teacher. And so she didn't stop her life because of us. Like, I think the message for anyone, like, especially women, is that like, just because, you know, we pop out these babies doesn't mean that, you know, that's it for us. Like, that's our end all being a mom. And by the way, that's actually okay too. If that's really what you want to do and focus on your kids and just be there 24/7. That would, like I said, that wasn't my only defining piece of who I am.
You just remember that a guy I knew women aren't a minority, but you know what I mean, in terms of things have changed now. And he's a black guy, and he said, and I don't know if it works for women. He said, I think about the people that fought for me to be able to do stuff, so I do stuff. And I don't know if it works for women still, but you think, you know, make the most of the people that did things before you that never got to see the echoes of what they did.
My mum for sure, and my aunt.
And also age. I was saying this to somebody the other day. You really have to get your head around the fact that when you say 30 or 40, you're still carrying what you thought a 40-year-old is growing up. So it's not. It's actually 20 years younger than you think. So 40, really. You think when you was 15 and you saw a 40-year-old, well, that's sort of...
They were old.
But remember, it's... health, everything. Yeah. It's not what you think.
Age is just a number.
But I mean, it literally isn't what you thought it was. No. It's much. You look at like Sylvester Stallone at 80.
Madonna.
But
any of the Rolling Stones.
After 50, you're dead. Yeah. 80. And you're jumping around as a stuntman. You go, but you really have to go, no, it's your brain's still lying to you. 40, 30's like a kid. That's when it starts.
I feel like I'm 21.
I said, nobody should do anything until you're 30. No marriage, don't get stuck in a career, up path. Don't start educating yourself at 30.
That's how I feel. Like going into my 30s, I feel like I'm on this personal development. I want to learn things more now, you know? I want to... Back when I was younger, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Yeah. Like there was the pressure of going into university. You need to study. Yeah. You need to think about what you're going to do for life, your career.
Yeah.
And now at 30, I'm just like, but actually I'm interested in learning this. I'm interested in learning this. I mean, maybe it's my ADHD. But I just, but it's just like, I feel like, as you said, it's never too late to start. Yeah. If you want to do it now, do it now.
No, because life is too short.
Yeah.
And we are younger, older. Yeah. Like we have more energy, like we know more, we have access to healthier foods, lifestyle could change.
You've got to account for an extra 20 years now on the end.
We know more. We're living longer, so which is terrific. And so let's use the experience on this earth towards us getting even better for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Nobody else. Just to take you and be like, how am I going to be my best you, my best me? Yeah. And that's the goal is to take, you're the only one on this journey, right?
I know a psychologist I spoke to, a consultant psychologist, he was saying, talking about kids, he said, talking about like you being happy and you doing your thing, he said, your kids are actually, he gave a percentage, I can't remember what it was, he said, they're living their life through your eyes. So how you look at the world is actually affecting how they look at the world. Do you make goals and
until
things?
They move away and they find another girl?
Well, then they do it through pop stars and music, replace you for a while.
Exactly. I mean, yes, for a while. But then they,
20 years later, they come back to...
The core things.
So true. It's so true. Yeah.
Right. Well, there you go.
Where can people find you?
Find me. Yeah. I'm everywhere.
Everywhere.
So StaceyJackson.com or all my social media is StayRox, StaeRox. So yeah, I'm actually pretty I'm good with the social media considering like I'm an old lady. I enjoy it and I'm engaged with I'm mature. I enjoy being on it because I really do engage. I have some pretty great fans, like legit, who like my music and they're just and I get it. They've helped me build, you know. I couldn't do this without the cheerleading section of my fans. So
you've just started the journey. It's just kicking in now. It's all going.
Until I drop dead, but it's all good. No, I'm enjoying it. I'm still at the beginning of my journey because now I'm at the beginning of the author journey. We'll see where this goes, and hopefully the book does well. And that's all that matters for me right now, with the book, the music. And then maybe my fitness line of clothes will come back out again. I don't know. You know, I'm like an oven or a stove top where I have things simmering. One thing's bubbling now. I've got to pay attention to that before, I overcook the pasta.
What are you doing today? What you got up to today?
I'm actually going to go out for a pizza. My friend's son is visiting from LA. So I'm going to take him for lunch around here.
Is there any talk of marriage? Any of the kids? Are they that age?
Because I really like the girls.
All right.
Maybe.
Well, listen, thank you very much.
No, it was a pleasure.
Oh, actually, I should say thank you for Will. Will was not feeling well at all yesterday. And he said, do you know what? I'm not going to let you down. I'm going to come in. At the last minute, he said, no, I'm going to come in.
So you're very sweet.
Thank you, Will.
He's traveled all the way in from the Renaissance period.
Yes, I can tell with the gorgeous hair. I love it.
All right, thanks. So thank you, Will, and thank you, Stacey.
Nice to meet you guys.
Here's your story. Let's begin. The world is fine. Come on, dive in. The future's here. It's right before your eyes. Step by step, you're on your way. You're welcome to a brighter day. Don't you know it feels good to be alive? You could be larger.